You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Guess what, Mango?
What's that, Will?
Actually, wait. Before we get started, let's high five real quick.
Okay.
High five. And fist bump. And, oh, yeah, and chest bump.
I feel like you're just stalling. What's this all about?
Well, this is actually very relevant. There's research from the NBA that shows that a good predictor of team performance is how often the team high fives or fist bumps, chest bumps, and head slaps. So I feel like it might help us have a good show.
I'm going to draw the line at head slapping, but that is pretty interesting.
I'm not 100% sure what the head slapping thing is, even though I watch a lot of basketball. But there's actually another basketball fact that I think is even more interesting. After looking at the results of tens of thousands of NBA and college games, these researchers found that teams trailing by a single point at halftime are actually more likely to win than the teams winning by a point. In fact, they found it was statistically equivalent to a two-point halftime lead.
Oh, that's crazy. So why is that?
Well, it's all about timing. So the science of perfect timing is pretty fascinating. And to help us make sense of it, we've got Daniel Pink, the brilliant author of a brand new book called Win, The Scientific Secrets of Perfect Timing. And he's here to explain it all. So let's dive in. Hey there, podcast listeners. Welcome to Part-Time Genius. I'm Will Pearson. And as always, I'm joined by my good friend Mangesh Hatikader. And the man on the other side of the soundproof glass, playing Cyndi Lauper's Time After Time very softly in our headphones. That's our friend and producer, Tristan McNeil.
I didn't realize what it was until he slowly turned it off.
That rascal. Anyway, Mango, are you ready to talk about perfect timing?
I am. You know, I think what's so striking in reading Daniel's book was just how little science we've put behind our decisions on when to do certain things. Like, we constantly analyze how to do things, how to take a test, how to organize a productive meeting, how to be healthier. But when it comes to the when decisions, we really leave that to a gut feeling. So I'm super excited to talk to Daniel Pink about his research, because this book is really fascinating.
I'm with you on that. All right, well, let's not hold off any longer. Today, we're joined by the author of several books, including the New York Times bestsellers Drive, To Sell as Human, and A Whole New Mind. But his newest book that just came out yesterday, actually, is called Win, The Scientific Secrets of Perfect Timing. Daniel Pink, welcome to Part-Time Genius.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Now, Daniel, you open the book with a story about a study out of Cornell. There are these two sociologists. They're doing a big data analysis of 500 million tweets, you know, along with the other research that have helped find these patterns of the day. So can you talk a little bit about that, and how the heck do you do an analysis of 500 million tweets?
Yeah, well, fortunately, I didn't do this analysis. These guys at Cornell did it. And it's actually one of the interesting things about how research is done these days and how we can use giant amounts of data to find hidden insights. So essentially what they did was this. So tweets, remember, are actual text, right? So they're words or letters, characters. And there is a piece of software called LIWC. That's the acronym, L-I-W-C, for the Linguistic Inventory Word Count. This software allows us to measure what essentially the emotional content of the word. So if I look at a word like bummed out, I say, oh, okay, that's someone who's a little bit low emotion, excited, high emotion. And so what you can do is that instead of going through these things one by one, this is the great thing about computers, this ability to crunch these numbers. They throw all of these 500 million tweets into this program. And their question is, does people's mood as reflected by these tweets change over the course of a day? Hmm. And the answer was, heck yeah.
And how so?
Well, what they found was this really intriguing pattern. There was a peak, a trough, and a recovery. And again, this is obviously controlled for time zone. Early in the day, where people had a more positive mood, that positive mood was fairly steady until about noon. Then in the early to mid-afternoon, it began to dip. It dipped considerably over the afternoon and then rose again in the late afternoon, early evening. And what they found were essentially three stages, a peak, a trough, and a recovery. That is, we had positive mood in the morning, strong dive in mood in the early to mid-afternoon, and then a recovery later in the day.
Hmm. Very interesting.
Yeah, so obviously, you know, we're not all the same. And we've talked a little bit about, like, circadian rhythms in our episode on sleep a while back. But you talk about chronotypes and how to use them to perform best. Can you tell us exactly what a chronotype is and how people would identify themselves as whatever?
So there's a whole field of study called chronobiology, and chrono for time, biology for study of life. And it looks at, exactly as you say, our daily rhythms. What it finds is that people have certain types, certain propensities. Some of us rise early, fall asleep earlier. Some of us rise late, fall asleep late. Some people are larks, morning people. Some people are owls, evening people. But the truth is that most of us are kind of in between, what I like to call third birds. And if you're a lark or a third bird, you generally go through the day in the order that I just mentioned, a peak, a trough, a recovery. That you have in the mornings, you're generally at your best, both in terms of mood and in terms of vigilance. In the early afternoons, there's a pretty significant deterioration and then some kind of recovery later in the day. But the one in five of us who are very strong owls, nighttime types, these are people who go to sleep just naturally very late and wake up late, people for whom 8 o'clock staff meetings are just a form of torture, those folks tend to go in more or less the reverse order, recovery, trough, peak.
And that would probably be you, Mango.
Yeah,
you
definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
Time do you – well, here's a test. We can test you right now. All right, we'll do the basic back-of-the-envelope chronotype test here. So let's say it's a day where you don't have to wake up to an alarm clock, which for many people is a weekend, okay? So what time would you usually go to sleep?
Yeah, I mean, I think kids have thrown everything off, but I think probably between 3 and 4, you know?
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah.
You're talking about 4 a.m.?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't even have to do the rest of this test. And what time would you usually wake up?
I don't know. By about 10, I'd say.
10? Okay, yeah. So what we would do in this case is we'd find your midpoint of sleep. So if you go to sleep at 3 and wake up at 10, your midpoint of sleep would, I guess, be 6:30 a.m., which would make you a pretty strong owl.
I'd say that's a pretty strong owl.
Yeah. About 1 out of 5 people are pretty strong owls.
Like the designation of a strong owl.
Yeah, he's a very strong owl.
Yeah, that's pretty owly. How old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm 38.
Oh, man, you're a serious owl then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, congratulations.
He's been that way for a long time. In college, he was paired up with another owl, and so we all had to be aware that they would just wake up at about, 2 in the afternoon and talk about what they were going to get for breakfast.
What's interesting is that's one reason I asked you your age, is that most of us go through a period between about age 14 and 24 when we become the owliest in our life. And that has to do with hormones and whatever. So there's a pretty significant shift beginning basically post-puberty where people shift literally in some cases 2-3 hours later into the day. But then as time goes on, they go back to their earlier. So what you have is you have like little kids, as I think Magesh has discovered, are pretty lark. They get up pretty early. And we basically are strong larks early in our life and then later in our life. The older you get, the larkier you become in general.
Well, you talk about this a little bit in the book when you were talking about those teenage years. And we've heard this before, the advocacy for a later start time, you know, in the American Academy of Pediatrics actually issuing a policy statement urging schools to start. I think it was no earlier than 8:30. And yet, right. You know, fewer than one in five schools actually follow this, as you indicated in the book. Well, why do you think that is?
Because they don't take these timing questions seriously. They don't take questions of when seriously. Mm-hmm. These schools, and I don't mean to pick on schools because I think it's true for all our institutions. We take very seriously, okay, what are we going to do? All right, so they take curriculum very seriously. What are we going to do? How are we going to do it? How are we going to teach it? We have professional development days to improve our pedagogy. How are we going to do it? Who are we going to do it with? They take hiring pretty seriously. But then we take these questions of when. And we say, that doesn't really matter. That's like we take these questions of when and we sit them at the kids' table rather than at the grown-ups' table. And that's a huge mistake. These questions of when, these questions of timing, as you're saying with school start times, have a material effect on people's well-being. School start times alone, there is evidence that these early start times, again, for people who are very owly, teenagers tend to be, starting school at 7:30 in the morning is ridiculous. They're barely even awake.
Yeah.
And the consequence of that is dire. You have higher rates of depression, higher rates of obesity, increased incidence of auto accidents, higher dropout rates, reduced performance on standardized tests. And schools that have done something about this, and again, we're not talking about like a mangish schedule where you start school at 3 p.m. we're talking about like starting it at like 9 a.m. rather right. than 7:30 in the morning. Mm-hmm. Schools that have made those that modest step have basically followed the recommendations of the American Academy of Pediatrics have seen, lo and behold, higher test scores, lower dropout rate. If you just think about the workplace, time of day explains about 20% of the variance in our performance on cognitive tasks. So, you know, 20%. So it doesn't mean the timing is everything, but it means it's a freaking big thing.
Right, right, right. Well, speaking of that material difference, as you mentioned, you know, not just affecting teenagers, but adults as well. You talk about this Bermuda Triangle of our days in the afternoons. And we all know that there tends to be that afternoon slump. We've all experienced it, especially after Mangesh and I have been downstairs eating ramen for lunch and then feel that mid-afternoon slump. But actually hearing from you and hearing the hard evidence of this, whether it's with standardized tests or even results from juries, can you talk a little bit about that impact?
It's huge and it's terrifying. There's research from Denmark showing that kids score systematically lower if they take standardized tests in the afternoon versus they take them in the morning. Okay, so just think about that in terms of the extent to which standardized tests affect the kid's fate or they affect education policy. Again, time of day is having this massive effect, but it's invisible to us. If you look at something like you make an interesting point about juries, our criminal justice system. There's some really good experimental evidence showing that if you have two defendants, it's a famous experiment, one named some participants have a defendant named Robert Garner. Some have one named Roberta Garcia. And if you have the same set of facts, juries that deliberate in the morning treat those defendants the same. Juries that have the same set of facts and deliberate in the afternoon during this trough period, guess what? They are more likely to convict Garcia and exonerate Garner on the same set of facts.
Wow.
And that's terrible.
It's
right there.
Crazy.
Yeah.
But wait, there's more, because now we can go into healthcare. Doctors and nurses are far less likely to wash their hands in the afternoons than in the mornings. If you look at things like anesthesia, you're three times more likely to have an anesthesia error in an afternoon procedure than in a morning procedure.
It's terrifying.
Yeah, the whole thing is terrifying. And so over even if we look at things like auto accidents, there's some good research out of the UK. You know, when do auto accidents peak? If you adjust for how many cars are on the road, mm-hmm. big surprise, they peak between like 4 and 6 a.m. Okay, because it's the middle of the night and it's really dark. But the second most common time is between 2 and 4 p.m.
Yeah.
It's perfectly light outside.
Huh. Yeah.
We don't take these kinds of time of day effects nearly seriously enough, and they have a big, big effect on literally in some cases life and death.
Oh, these are some scary statistics. Now we have several more questions for you, but before we get to those, let's take a quick break.
This is it. Your moment.
This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Welcome back to Part-Time Genius. We're talking to Daniel Pink, the author of When, The Scientific Secrets of Perfect Timing.
Daniel, I know we talked about the fact that I'm not a morning person, but I was curious about morning exercise because that's something you talk about in your book. Can you tell us about the benefits of doing it then versus the afternoon and what it means for your body?
Yeah, this is something that I was really interested in because I was trying to figure it out for myself. It's pretty easy to figure out whether you should exercise in the morning or the afternoon. It all depends on what your goals are. So if your goals are to lose weight, exercise in the morning. You're going to burn off more calories than typically. If you exercise in the morning, you're going to get a mood boost for a bigger period of the day. If you exercise later in the day, you might sleep through some of that mood boost. There's some good evidence showing that morning exercise makes us slightly more likely to stick to the routine. And testosterone levels actually peak in the morning. If you're doing some strength-based training, mornings can be good for that. On the other hand, afternoon, late afternoon is good for other kinds of things. So one of the big things that affects our physiology over the course of a day is a change in body temperature, believe it or not. And when our body temperature tends to rise to its highest point in the late afternoon and early evening, that makes our muscles warmer. And so we're more likely to avoid injury. So if you're prone to injury, you're concerned about injury, afternoon exercise is better. There's some really intriguing evidence showing that you might actually perform at a higher level during afternoon and early evening activity because lung function is the highest, your strength is higher, your reaction time is higher. There's some very intriguing evidence about athletic records, particularly in speed events, disproportionately being broken at between about 4 and 7 local time.
That's really fascinating.
And it's all about our, you know, basically about our body temperatures. Also, again, this is related up, and this is actually ended up sealing the deal for me, is that because we're doing a little bit better, we're, you know, our lung function is a little bit higher, our muscles are warmer, we're not risking exercise, we're not risking injury as much, that people tend to enjoy the workouts a little bit more in the afternoon, even if they're doing the exact same thing in the morning, they feel a little less taxing. For me, I am an afternoon, early evening exerciser. And I think it's for that last reason. When I go do exercise in the morning, I hate it.
Right.
It feels like torture. When I do it in the afternoon, I actually enjoy it a little bit more. And so, you know, if I were trying to lose a lot of weight, I might change things, but I exercise just so I don't go crazy. And
yeah.
So afternoon works for me. And I think it's because of just that my body is warmed up. I'm performing at a little bit of higher level, and it's less unpleasant than it is in the mornings.
Yeah. Well, back to the idea of productivity and things that we can do to be more productive. You talk about, you know, the importance of or the value of napping. Can you and I think we've heard that before, but can you talk a little bit about, you know, what the ideal nap is and what we're looking for in that and trying to be more productive?
Yeah, the ideal nap is a lot shorter than I ever realized. I haven't been a big napper. And the reason is that when I woke up from a nap, I felt terrible. I felt, you know, groggy and, mm-hmm. you know, cobwebs in my head. And what I discovered essentially is that I was doing it wrong. That the ideal nap is very, very short. Maybe, you know, usually no more than 20 minutes or so. What happens if we nap longer than that is that we begin to accumulate what's called sleep inertia. That's that boggy, groggy feeling that we have. And it takes us some time to dig out of that to get the benefits of the nap. So you basically start with a deficit and then have to climb out of the deficit. If you have a nap of 20 minutes or so, you get a lot of the benefit without any of the deficit. And so these super short naps, literally between 10 and 20 minutes, seem to be the maximum bang for the buck when it comes to napping.
Which I love because I'm from a siesta culture. Yeah. All my relatives
always
in India sleep in the afternoons.
Yeah, but you know, there's something to be said for, you know, what's interesting is that in the blaze of westernization and American style capitalism, we've obliterated siestas when in fact there's actually some pretty good scientific evidence for restoring some kind of modern siesta. I mean, I'm not talking about taking 3 hours for lunch every single day, but basically taking breaks and pauses much more seriously than we take them right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things, because I'm so focused on mornings now, I wanted to ask about is breakfast and how important it really is and where meals play a role in having the most productive days.
Is breakfast important? I think the answer from the research is a clear and conclusive maybe. and this has to do with some of the methodologies, which are observational studies rather than randomized control experiences. So, you know, these observational studies found that people who eat breakfast are healthy, but we don't know whether breakfast is causing their healthiness. It could just be that healthy people like to eat breakfast. People who are already healthy are eating breakfast and it has no causal effect, et cetera, et cetera. Some of these pro-breakfast studies were actually funded by cereal companies, so that should make us raise our eyebrows a little bit. In terms of time of day and eating, there's some very interesting research, pretty new stuff right now on what's called time-restricted feeding that's showing that you might be able to get a certain greater weight loss if you restrict your eating to a certain 10 or 12-hour period, and that weight gain could be – a factor in weight gain could be eating too late in the day. It's at early stages now. It's pretty intriguing. I actually looked at some of the research on lunch, and it turns out that lunch is a pretty powerful here I'm not talking about physiology, I'm talking about psychology. Lunch ends up being a pretty powerful restorative for us, much more than I would have expected. There's a very strong argument in the research for taking a lunch break, not just having a tuna salad sandwich dripping onto your computer while you're trying to answer email.
That's but, every lunch know, for us.
Yeah. But you know, being intentional and taking a lunch break, it doesn't have to be massive. You know, taking a half an hour and going outside and, you know, if the weather is right, you know, eating a sandwich on a bench and not working. The evidence is showing that that is restores our energy, can boost our mood, can actually improve our productivity and creativity. And the larger point here is that, and this is something where I've changed my own behavior, is that just in general, we haven't taken breaks seriously enough. We have thought of breaks as, you know, soft or deviations from performance. I am as guilty as anybody about this. I've never been a big break taker. I've always thought it was better just to power through. And it's actually not. We have to start thinking of breaks as not a deviation from performance, but actually part of performance, and recognize that part of being a professional means taking a break every once in a while.
So when I was reading the book, one thing I wasn't clear about, and I was just curious from your own perspective, where does social media play into that? Like when you're on a break and eating a sandwich on in nature or at a park, how does like looking at your phone influence that?
The real answer is it depends. So it depends on what you're looking at on your phone. In general, though, what the research shows is that the best breaks, you're fully detached, particularly from work. So if social media is a big part of your work, if you're looking at things, oh, what are they saying about my product, or you know, what's in the news that it's going to affect my business, then it's actually not that great of an idea. There's a lot to be said for full detachment as breaks rather than semi-detachment. So for me, for instance, I've changed my ways on this, is that when I have lunch, I will literally not bring my phone. I don't take a long lunch break at all, maybe 25 minutes, but I will leave my phone in my office. And so I don't risk being semi-detached. On the other hand, believe it or not, and this is going to sound crazy, but if you're using social media and as a form of detachment, that is, you're looking at hilarious videos or something like that have nothing to do with your work, then it's not the worst thing in the world to have that kind of a break. There's actually some evidence. I mean, believe it or not, there's some evidence that people who take breaks watching, it's going to sound like it's made up. It's totally not made up. People who take breaks and watch dog videos during their breaks end up coming back from the breaks a little bit more restored. So that's probably not true for people who run kennels. So it really depends on, you know, how you're using social media. I find it, well, social media is very complicated, and I'm squarely in the middle. I don't consider it, you know, the devil's technology, nor do I consider it the, you know, the panacea for all that ails the world. It's obviously somewhere in the middle of that. What I have found personally, and again, this is just a complete personal experience and observation, not based on any research or anything like that. I find that Twitter raises my stress level, increases my cortisol level, because on Twitter, it seems like everybody's always complaining about something or becoming alarmed by something or yelling at somebody. So for that, I find it's not that, for me personally, it's not that useful.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Well, I know we have a few other big questions for you, Daniel. Before we get to those, let's take a quick break.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Welcome back to Part-Time Genius. We're talking to Daniel Pink, the author of Win, The Scientific Secrets of Perfect Timing. Now, Daniel, before you came on, Mango and I were actually talking about some of the studies that were done around the game of basketball, and that fact about being behind a point at the half is actually more advantageous than being ahead by a point. And so why is this, and what does this mean for us in other areas of our lives?
Yeah, I love that piece of research. And again, it's another one of those insights that scholars have been able to uncover using big data. That particular piece of research, I think it was somewhere around 18,000 NBA games. Just to take a step back, I mean, one of the things it's important to understand is how bizarre this finding is, because in general, a team that's ahead at halftime has a better chance of winning. Now, that shouldn't be a shocker, okay? Because they have more points, right?
Science.
You know, they already have more points, right? And the game's half over, all right? And they have a lead. So, you know, mathematically, it's not that complicated. The other thing is that their halftime lead could be a proxy that they have better players or they have a better coach or something like that. What's interesting is, as you guys point out, is the exception to that, which is that teams that are down by one are more likely to win. Why is that? And it goes to some of the science of midpoints. Midpoints have two effects on our behavior. They either bring us down or they fire us up. And one of the cases where midpoints fire us up is that if we're slightly behind, there's something about being slightly behind at the midpoint that is galvanizing. Now, because if you're way ahead at the midpoint, you can become complacent. If you're way behind, you say, okay, it's over. It's, you know, you give up. But both in terms of the research on basketball games and also some experimental research, which is a better way to get at causation, is showing that when people feel like they're slightly behind at the midpoint, they work a little harder. And one of the things that you can do, and you know, at some level you can trick yourself, you can trick your team, or it can be the actual honest account of what's going on. I do this all the time, is like, okay, I'm at the midpoint of something, I'm slightly behind, I got to get my butt in gear. And so if you're managing a project and you hit the midpoint, a team, hey, we're doing pretty well, but we're a little bit behind.
Right.
That's really galvanizing.
That's pretty fascinating. So.
And so is that represented in why people do so many marathons at like 29 or 39 in those 9 years?
That's a different phenomenon. That has to do with endings. You know, as you point out, people who run first-time marathoners, their age is disproportionately ends in 9. So 29, 39, 49. Say 49-year-olds are 3 times more likely to run a first-time marathon than 50-year-olds.
Wow.
It's crazy. All right? 29-year-olds are twice as likely to run a first-time marathon as 28-year-olds or 30-year-olds. Right? It makes no sense physiologically, but what's happening is that when we get to the end of something, endings also have a galvanizing effect. So when we can see the end, we sometimes kick a little harder, and that's particularly true when it comes to things that are sources of meaning. So people have bucket lists and people have things they want to accomplish in their lives, and people have these purely arbitrary markers of decades. They say, oh my gosh, time is moving fast. I got to get going. I'm going to run a marathon.
That's pretty amazing.
And that's why you're holding off, Mango. You're 38 now, and next year is your big year, I think.
So 10 years from now,
I'll start training.
So I know one thing I was curious about is, what's the best time to deliver bad news? Do you have any thoughts on that?
The best time to deliver bad news. Well, I mean, I think there's the best time and a best way. The best time to deliver bad news in general is when the recipient's mood is higher, more positive than negative. And what we know in general for most people is that their moods are slightly better in the mornings and in the late afternoons and early evenings than in the afternoon. So I think that's generally it's a good time to do it. In terms of the classic formulation that everybody on the planet has used, I've got some good news and some bad news. Theirs is a very, very clear answer. If you have good news and bad news to deliver, always give the bad news first. The reason for that is that it has to do with the science of endings. People prefer endings that elevate. They prefer rising sequences to declining sequences. And so, and what's interesting about that, and this is again another area where I've changed my own behavior. I used to be Mr. Okay, I got good news and bad news. Let me give you the good news first. You know, try to lay down that cushion. But when you ask people, what do you want to hear first, the good news or bad news? 4 out of 5 people say, I want the bad news first. And so you're better off giving the bad news first and ending with the good news. Again, it has to do with our preferences about endings that elevate rising sequences over declining sequences.
Well, and I like that you offer a few tips on this, whether it's, you know, how to end vacations or how to end our work days. You know, as you mentioned, people like an elevated ending. Can you talk
Absolutely.
A little bit about some of these suggestions that you've given in the book?
I think the most important thing is to be intentional about endings and to recognize that endings disproportionately affect how people remember entire experiences. So if you look at something like customer transactions, I think that businesses should be much more, pay much more attention to how a purchase experience ends. And you can see this anecdotally in Yelp reviews of restaurants. If you actually read Yelp reviews of restaurants, you find that a disproportionate number of these reviews talk about how the meal ended. You know, they screwed up the check and they were jerks about it. They gave me a dessert I didn't expect, and that affects their whole. In terms of vacations, pick one of the what you think is going to be one of the best moments and put it toward the end. The end of an experience disproportionately affects our memory of it. I've got some great examples from teachers around the country about how teachers have marked the end of a semester or the end of a year. One of my favorites is this fellow who's a economics teacher at a high school outside of Chicago. And what he does is that at the end of people's senior years, he has them write a letter to themselves that he mails to them 5 years later. Just an awesome thing. There's another college teacher who, at the end of a semester, she takes her students out to a local pub and they make toasts to each other. And so just being intentional about endings and giving them a little bit of lift can dramatically shape how people remember an entire year-long, semester-long experience.
That's really good. And you talk a little bit about how we might end our work days. I thought there were some great suggestions there as well.
Sure. I mean, I think it's a lot about being intentional about how we end our work day. So one of the things that you can do at the very end of your work day, something that I do is that I actually mark my progress. I actually use an app called I Done This that sends me an email at the end of every day. It says, what'd you get done today? And I make sure to ritualize, okay, here's what I got done today. So I have a sense of progress. So I mark that progress. There's some great research from Teresa Amabile at Harvard Business School about how making progress is the single largest day-to-day motivator on the job. So that's one of the things that I myself do. You can also do things like there's something about a sense of completion. So one of the things I try to do, I don't always do a good job of this, is lay out what I'm going to do the following day. So I have a sense of completion. I can kind of close the door on the day, take a break, detach from work to the extent that's possible. There are also things at the end of the day as mood boosters. One of the, you know, it's really remarkable, the research on doing something good for somebody else boosts our mood. It ends up being doing something good for someone else can be a profoundly selfish act in terms of its benefit to us. So, you know, maybe at the end of the day, thank somebody who you hadn't thanked before. But again, it's really about being aware and being intentional. And these small things can make a big difference.
Well, before we end here, I did want to ask you a little bit about the sinker's high and the tips on syncing with other people, because I really like that bit in your book. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. You know, I also have a chapter on how groups synchronize in time. So whether they're people who are delivering lunches, whether they're rowers, whether they're choral singers. And there is something about synchronizing with other people in time that makes us feel really, really good. There's some good evidence on rower's high that when we synchronize with other people, actually our pain thresholds increase, our immune response improves. At a physiological level, we do better. There's some incredible effects to our mood. And even to our propensity to do good deeds afterwards. So it's really quite fascinating. I don't have a great explanation for it. I just noted the phenomenon and some of the research behind it. But there's something about synchronizing with other people in time, like choral singing, that makes us feel really, really good. That could be somehow evolutionarily programmed to feel good because it has some kind of advantage to us.
That's really interesting. Well, as we said at the top of the show, this is it's interesting that we've gone this long without really thinking about the when of all these questions, as we've talked about before. You know, we've focused so much on the how and the why, but this has been so fascinating to learn these things. And listeners, I hope you'll check out this new book, When: The Scientific Secrets of Perfect Timing. Daniel Pink, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks to you guys both for a great interview. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks again for listening. Part-Time Genius is a production of How Stuff Works and wouldn't be possible without several brilliant people who do the important things we couldn't even begin to understand.
Tristan McNeil does the editing thing.
Noel Brown made the theme song and does the mixy-mixy sound thing.
Jerry Rowland does the exec producer thing.
Gabe Luzier is our lead researcher with support from the Research Army, including Austin Thompson, Nolan Brown, and Lucas Adams.
And Eves Jeffcoat gets the show to your ears. Good job, Eves.
If you like what you heard, we hope you'll subscribe. And if you really, really like what you've heard, maybe you could leave a good review for us. Jason who?
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.